This is Stateside. I'm Zoe Clark, sitting in for Cynthia Canty. Big news out of Lansing yesterday. Governor Snyder has proposed committing up to $350 million of state money to guarantee City of Detroit pension benefits and to keep Detroit Institute of Arts Art off the auction block. Now, I say big news, but not altogether surprising. Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes has been writing about this possible cash infusion for weeks now. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, how are you?
So the actual announcement yesterday wasn't necessarily a surprise, but the fact that Snyder has gotten Republican leaders in the legislature to back this, how surprising is that?
Well, I think it's a little surprising. It's been pretty clear to me for some period of time that this was going to happen. And when nine foundations, including the Kresge Foundation in Troy and the Ford Foundation out of New York, came forward with $330 million, essentially a downstroke on this campaign, I think that really got their attention in Lansing. And the governor has kind of gone from, we're not going to be committing state money to this effort, to maybe if we can close a deal here or settle this case, we would do it. And so that's kind of ultimately the rationale that he's using. And so are his Republican leaders in both sides of the legislature.
Right. But it's interesting when you saw him yesterday and you saw these leaders and how they're talking about it, the language that's being used, you know, saying this is not a bailout, that the state is using state money to help Detroit. How are you watching this?
Well, look, I mean, they can say whatever they want to say, and I can understand politically why they're saying it, that it's not a bailout. But as we have seen the last 5 years in the context of the Detroit automakers, people are going to call it whatever they want. And I think you're going to get a lot of pushback from all parts of the state, including in Southeast Michigan, for people who are going to say we shouldn't be rewarding bad behavior. They should, the people of Detroit and the employees and whatnot need to atone for the sins of their leadership. I happen to think that's pretty short-sighted, and I think so does the governor, and so he's putting this forth. It's really important that people understand that this money, this fund, which could be somewhere between $700-$800 million, is not going to make pensioners whole.
Right.
Not if you've got a $3.5 billion liability. This is going to be money that's going to be probably paid over 20 years. It's going to be managed by professionals appointed essentially by the state and or these foundations. It's not going to be handed over lock, stock, and barrel to the pension funds. It will be used to supplement them, and I think that's a really important point. So over time, this money could grow, and I think there's some expectation that a lot of the pensioners could turn out pretty good, depending on their age and how long, at what point they would get into the system. But this is an attempt to close the deal. For a long time, people have acknowledged that this is one of the real sticking points in the bankruptcy, that as long as pensioners are going to be asked to take a fairly substantial hit, they're going to go after the DIA's holdings. And I think a lot of people look at the DIA as something that is critical to the rebuilding of Detroit.
Yeah. So this state money, it's going to come from revenue that Michigan gets every year as part of the late 90s settlement between states and tobacco companies. But the plan still has to be okayed by the legislature. So what's the messaging going to be to those folks who just say, we don't want to do this?
I think the messaging is going to be very simple. And we got a taste of it yesterday. And that is this. This is going to be a lot less expensive to taxpayers if we do this now and pay it over 20 years than if this Detroit bankruptcy gets into a protracted fight. It's going to impact the state's ability to recruit businesses. If in fact they do move ahead and try to sell off the art of the DIA, I think that becomes a slippery slope. That it becomes a real problem for the city internationally, much less nationally. So it can be a lot worse. And I think that's somewhat of a compelling argument. The other thing I thought was interesting use of politicking was both Jace Bolger and Randy Richardville, the leaders, making the point that they're Detroit retirees all over the state.
Yeah.
That they're in their districts. They're in Monroe. They're in Petoskey. They're in the UP. They're in Kalamazoo. They're wherever. You know, and they want to know kind of what's going to happen here. And I think that's also a fair point. You know, this bankruptcy, Detroit is a unit of the state. Detroit is not a sovereign city under U.S. law. There's no such thing as a sovereign city
right.
in the United States. This is an extension of the state. It's a creation of the state of Michigan. And to some extent, there is some responsibility for that here. And what we've seen in the last year, year and a half, is the governor and the legislature exerting and taking on more of that responsibility. That's what the emergency manager law is all about. That's what the consent agreement was all about, and that was what the appointment of the bankruptcy.
And what an interesting dynamic that is, because it seems like for decades, you know, more liberals and progressives were saying that, you know, Detroit, it is a fuel for what the economy looks like in Michigan as a whole, and then suddenly you see this turnabout, and now the Republicans, the GOP, are pushing that message to those in their caucus.
Well, the other thing that's very interesting about this, Zoe, I think, is when the story of this is written, the big story of this is written, I think you may, depending on how it ends up, you may have a storyline that goes something like this, that a Republican governor saved the Democratic Party in Detroit. Because I think when this is all over, and nobody expects that Detroit's going to be a Republican city, and nobody expects that it's going to be a non-union city.
Sure.
It's just not going to happen.
Sure.
But as a result, I mean, I think the actions taken by Governor Snyder are probably going to end up saving that system. And with Mike Duggan as mayor, I think you're going to see the locus of Democratic power in Michigan is going to shift clearly to the city of Detroit.
And that's what I want to talk about. I mean, how does Duggan play into this, or how does Mark Schauer, likely Democratic candidate for governor, how do they fit into this?
Well, I might take those in two pieces.
Okay.
I've seen some of the commentary by Mark Schauer on the bankruptcy, and I have to tell you, I'm slack-jawed at his lack of understanding of bankruptcy. I mean, some of the things that he said suggest to me, as somebody who spent the last year and a half trying to become a student of this, that a guy who's running for governor and in whom this issue is going to be front and center in the campaign doesn't really seem to have much of an understanding of the intricacies of bankruptcy and what works and what doesn't.
Is it that he doesn't understand it, do you think, or do you think it's that he has to put out these messages as a Democrat?
Well, my problem is and I think this is a real distinction to Mike Duggan, which I get to in a second.
Okay.
But I mean, I think it's one thing to put out messages; it's another thing to put out messages that are essentially grounded in Democratic populist rhetoric,
mm-hmm.
not in the reality of law of bankruptcy law, and more specifically, Chapter 9 municipal bankruptcy. There are certain things that can be done. There are certain things that cannot be done. As far as Mike Duggan is concerned, he's a totally different cat than Schauer in the sense that, you know, he's got the business experience. I think he understands the bankruptcy. I've heard him talk about it before he was inaugurated. He understands the nuances of what can happen and what can't happen. I had some long conversations with Kevin Orr, pursuant to their whole power-sharing agreement. And I think Kevin Orr has really kind of schooled him, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean it in a positive way,
yeah.
on what the challenges are and what he has to accomplish. And I think the mayor understands that, you know, Kevin's role here is to get this bankruptcy moving as quickly as possible, and in conjunction with the financials. And what the mayor needs to do is he needs to run the city operationally. And you know, I think for now that's good. At some point, I think things are going to get a little rocky. I think that's bound to happen. But, I think Mike Duggan, if you ask him questions and they start to stray into more bankruptcy kind of things, and he'll just put up his hands and say, you got to talk to Kevin about that.
We're speaking with Daniel Howes, Detroit News business columnist. So, Daniel, we're talking about this state money. We've talked about the money from private donations. But today in your column, you are focusing on what the DIA is going to bring to the table, monetarily speaking.
Well, what people expect them to bring.
Sure.
I think the DIA is very much frustrating a lot of the people we've been talking about. The foundations, I think, are frustrated. I think the governor is frustrated. The DIA basically is saying, you know, we have this plan. We had this plan when we took the millage to the voters of Oakland, Macomb, and Wayne counties a couple of years ago about how we were going to raise our endowment by $300 million over the next 10 years, how we were going to take in this money from the counties. And anything that is proposed that would push them off of that plan, they say, we can't do it. And that's just a non-starter with a lot of these people, because they're faced with a very singular opportunity and challenge in where we are with this bankruptcy. And a lot of things, you know, life throws you curveballs, mm-hmm. and this is a classic case of that. I mean, we saw this in 2008-09 with the car companies. You know, you had Rick Wagner, then CEO of General Motors, said, you know, we can't go bankrupt. We just can't do it. It can't happen. And as a result, they weren't prepared.
Right.
And
then it happens.
And there was a real risk of an uncontrolled bankruptcy. And I think in this context, the DIA can only go so long and say we can't. Because at some point, and I touch on it in today's column, the people who are putting the money up here are gonna demand some change.
Right.
And I think that could include board seats on the DIA. It could include other kinds of changes in their governance. It could include a lot of pressure to raise certain monies with certain constituencies. I think the corporate foundation community has yet to be tapped here. And when you've got companies like General Motors and Ford Motor Company that are sitting on literally tens of billions of dollars in cash, now, it's not likely to come out of their corporate cash hoard, but they can funnel it through their foundations. I think a lot of people expect that they will be asked for probably low double-digit million figures to pledge either towards the DIA or towards this fund. I mean, that remains to be seen exactly what channel it goes.
Well, so that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, do you think, how does this play out?
Well, I think we're going to see. We still got more fundraising to go.
Yeah.
We got to see where, like I said, the autos come in, where a DTE Energy comes in, where Dan Gilbert probably comes in, people with a real vested interest in what's going on in the redevelopment of downtown Detroit and the city of Detroit. So I think that's going to play out, and I suspect that there's going to be some very frank discussions between U.S. Chief Judge Jerry Rosen, who's the top federal mediator, members of the DIA and some of the foundations and probably the state about what needs to happen here, because I don't think people fully understand or want to understand, is maybe a better way to put it, what the museum is facing. I mean, they really are facing either this deal and trying to come up with a number that they can go to their donors and they can say, this is our contribution. It may not be $100 million, as a lot of people have told me that they think it ought to be. It may be 75, it may be 60. I don't know what that number is going to be. Or they say, we can't do this, and then they become pawns in a bankruptcy and get a lot of pressure from creditors on the judge to essentially start selling the art.
Right.
And if they do that, I think the other thing that's a real wild card here, Zoe, is the fact that the DIA, as we talk now, is still owned by the city.
Right.
And they have a contract with the city. The nonprofit DIA organization has a contract with the city. And in bankruptcy and under an emergency manager law, he can cancel contracts. So essentially they work for Kevin Orr. Now that would be kind of a nuclear option. But, I mean, if you get people that say, you know, we're not going to do this, we can't do this, say, well, guess you can't work for us anymore. We're canceling the contract.
Hmm.
Now, people have talked about that. I don't think anybody wants to go there, and I don't think anybody thinks they'll really get there.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of that kind of real heavy-handed stuff that's kind of out there in the weeds that could be used if necessary.
So let's just talk sort of short-term here in the next week or two. What are you going to be watching for?
Well, I want to see what kind of movement there's going to be, particularly on the side of the DIA, because I think that they've got a little bit of a window here, because Kevin Orr has delayed his decision on when he's going to file the plan of adjustment, which would kind of lay some of this stuff out. So they've got a little bit of time here. I think that's going to be the key, is what's going on behind the scenes and what kind of pressure is being brought to bear. Obviously, we'll have to keep an eye on what's going on in Lansing.
Right,
the Republican leadership will be trying to work this through their each of their caucuses and to get enough votes to be joined by the Democrats. I don't think there's any question this is going to be bipartisan.
Yeah.
It has to be in an election year.
It will be interesting to watch Republican leaders, you know, lobbying for money for Detroit.
Yeah, but you know, things have. I think that whole thing has kind of changed.
Yeah.
You know, there is still an awful lot of parochialism out there, and you see Republicans saying, you know, if Detroit's going to get this, I got to get something for my community. And you want to say, well, wait a minute. You know, this is a very singular thing. I don't think people understand fully, Zoe, what's going on in front of their eyes and has been going on in this state for 5 years. I mean, we've had half a century worth of bad habits and traditions that have been overturned in the auto sector in the last few years. And these companies are making enormous amounts of money, most of it from right here at home, not overseas, not in China, not in Europe, not in Latin America. And now it's moved on to the public sector. And they're doing things or trying to do things that people thought never could happen here. You could never get some of these things accomplished. And I think when this is all said and done, it's going to be a very different place. It doesn't mean it's going to be perfect, and it doesn't mean it's going to be the best city in America. But the auto industry in Michigan and the public sector in Detroit are doing some radical things because they don't have a choice. We even had that happen in our newspapers a few years back. We were one of the first major metropolitan newspapers to make some major changes because we didn't have a choice.
Sure.
And I think there are other parts of the country that are not quite as bad, but they're pretty bad, who are probably looking at this and saying, oh, my gosh, you know, they're really tackling some things. And they're doing some smart things because they're having the ability to kind of really look at best practice and say, how are we going to approach this? So I think a lot of things could be very different in a couple of years, depending on how the judge rules and depending on what the legislature does and what some people, frankly, in the private sector do.
And, of course, what happens come November 2014.
Well, obviously, I think that's exactly right. But I would say this. I don't think anybody, you would know better than I do, but I don't think anybody realistically thinks that the Democrats are going to get control of both houses of the legislature. If they did, I mean, you could see movement on things like right to work and stuff like that. But in terms of Detroit and moving forward, I think to some extent we see kind of the direction of that. And the governor is going in a different direction, a very unpredictable, not what you would predict for a Midwestern Republican to do, but I think he's more interested in solving the problems than he is in scoring the political points. If he was trying to be safe politically, he wouldn't go down this road.
As we've talked about before, this is a governor who is owning, politically speaking at least, Detroit.
Yeah, but think about that politically. I mean, that could have potentially national ramifications. I mean, he skirted when he came and talked to the Detroit News editorial board on Friday of the auto show week.
Yeah.
He skirted the question about national ticket, except to say that the other person that has to decide that is somebody called Sue, and she's made it fairly clear how she feels about that. But,
yeah. But
if there's anything that can raise a Michigan governor's stature nationally, it's fixing Detroit.
Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes. Daniel, thanks so much.
Thanks for your time.